It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Rolling for JJ Williams into the 25. Williams kicks it on. This could be a try. Williams has scored. That little chip through by Gareth Edwards really caught the Springbok defence by surprise. Williams got his boot as he chipped ahead, kicked it through. The bounce went his way and JJ Williams has put the line.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Unfortunately, Wales back to losing ways this weekend, meaning we've only had two victories all year coming against Italy and Georgia. And guess what? It's Italy up again next week. So who knows? Maybe we'll have a victory to talk about this time next week. But in the meantime, it's time for me and Dan to... Well, it's another autopsy, Dan, I'm afraid, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's been a long few weeks, isn't it? And it's going to continue, I think.
Well, that much we can be sure. Crucially, though, we got lots of listeners' questions in again, as we often do when it's the in the wake of the internationals. We like to hand the show over to the listeners. So the agenda is very much set by you guys this week, which is fantastic. But before we get into those, let's just have your take in 60 seconds, Dan, of yesterday's game.
Yeah, I thought it was quite a poor quality game, really, for the rugby neutral. I mean, I enjoyed it because it was combative, really, but it was, you know, stop start, wasn't it? Very staccato. I don't think either side got past three, maybe four phases. So, you know, three or four phases, lots of kicking, scrums, you know, a shambles there, lineouts were poor. It wasn't pretty, was it? And it led to quite a dire game, really. But like I said, I did still enjoy the physical nature of it.
Yeah, I'd agree with most of that, apart from the enjoying the game bit. I feel like the rugby world at the moment is split into two camps, and you have the kind of the old guards, the Stephen Jones journalists of this world, who say that the game's gone to the pot and needs looking at it. Otherwise, you know, no one's gonna ever watch it again. And then you tend to have the younger, trendier journalists, you know, the Ben James and the Squidge Rugbys of this world, who all seem to be saying this is the game. You kind of got to deal with it. And for once, I find myself siding with the Stephen Jones camp. I'm like, this is terrible to watch. It's not just because Wales are playing badly. The whole of the Northern Hemisphere is, I don't know, it's.
You must be the one person he hasn't blocked.
Yeah, I know. I think it's only because he doesn't know I exist. And I only really follow him in like a kind of, it's almost like a bit of a rubbernecking, the way you look at a car crash kind of way. You know, you can't help but have a look every now and again. But I don't know, I'm kind of with him on this one. I just think the defences are so good. Analysts play a really important part of the game. And they do an incredibly good job at looking at the technical side of things, looking at organising defences and percentages, which, you know, has led everyone to believe that the right way to play in terms of winning is to play, you know, to play a very kicking orientated game. And do you know what? That probably is the right way for winning. So my suggestion is, can we not change that? And we have a little few tweaks to the rules, which actually means that you're encouraged to keep the ball in hand. So I don't know. We'll, I'd love to get your take on this.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I know a good number of people are saying we need to make some sort of amendments to the rules just to see more running rugby. I mean, it's well documented with England, isn't it? They want to kick the ball away.
Hmm.
They don't want the ball. They're really, really comfortable without it. I actually think they're pretty comfortable with it, really, as well, to be honest.
But, I do as well.
It's more risky. So they've weighed up everything, and it works for them not to, you know, just to boot the ball away and back the, you know, back the defence. And to be fair, that's what Gatland liked to do as well, didn't he? Keep the ball on the park, let them run at us. We'll force a mistake. We'll back the defence. So yeah, they don't make for great games, great spectacles. But I suppose what you have to almost change your mindset, don't you, really, and look at it as a tactical game of nous and one trying to outsmart the other. So I guess why Squidge and people like Ben James and others like it is probably because they are analysing the games in a slightly different way than to a fan would. You know, the more you look into something, the more you'll see, oh, right, that's why they're doing that, and that makes perfect sense. But actually, so there are very, very two different split camps, aren't there? But I think that's one of the main reasons why. I mean, children are often linked to this argument, aren't they? And little ones aren't interested in watching the games anymore because they find them really boring. And I get that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, you know, you and I have watched a lot of rugby over the years, and, you know, being a Dragons fan, a lot of it has been rubbish. But until now, I found myself this weekend thinking, do you know what? I've only got a limited amount of spare time across the course of a weekend. Would I'd rather watch the T20 cricket. I'd rather watch the, I'd rather watch some of the football. I just found myself this weekend, you know, obviously I watched the Wales game and I was kind of excited about it, but not really. I don't know if this is just because Wales are in the doldrums and that's the feeling you get. But I even when we were playing terribly under Gatland, you know, like you look back to autumn of 2012, we lost all those games, lost to Samoa. It was, you know, it was an absolute stinker of an autumn. I was still desperate for it to watch every single game. And I don't know, maybe it's just me overreacting, but I think it's the fact that this tournament's been so lackluster as well. There's been very little in it for the neutral. It's not really a proper competition, is it? It's just going to play out into, you know, essentially a series of friendlies against sides that you play every single year anyway. So maybe that's part of it. But all I'm thinking is, you know, if you get to the stage where I'm not excited about watching rugby and I've watched a lot of rubbish over the years, then I don't know, maybe something's wrong. But I'm only one person, aren't I?
It's a very, very strange times we're in at the moment as well, aren't we? And I think, you know, everyone's probably slightly more emotional and worn out than any of us really realise. I don't think it definitely doesn't help, does it, having nobody, no fans, no atmosphere.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's sort of, again, it's sort of where you can take yourself to, really, to get interested, you know, to get interested in it. It must be very difficult for the players as well. So it's an odd time, but certainly, you know, defences are getting tighter than they have been for years and years and years, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's just where I think.
And it's changing what we're watching.
Yeah, and I just think a couple of slight alterations could develop that into something that then means, okay, it's the analyst's job is now to look at opening up attacking opportunities. And anyway, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it'd be a good pod, that changes.
See what it would. Think. Maybe, yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on it. So please get in touch with us on Twitter at Attacking Scrum if you want to have your say. And lots of you have done that with questions coming in from myself and Dan. And we're going to start with this one from Steve Davis. Right, a lot of players have come to prominence in the English Premiership. Lewis Rees-Samet, Will Rowlands, Tom Francis. Lloyd Sheedy, Johnny Williams, and a few more. Is the Pro 14 holding us back? Is it a suitable standard to step up for top international teams? That's a great question to get us underway.
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. I mean, from Saturday, the boys that really stood out for Wales are playing over the bridge, aren't they, at the moment? But yeah, Pro 14 is not a great tournament, is it? And no. It's not competitive week in, week out. That's been the case for a number of years, and may potentially it's getting worse in that regard. So yeah, the very fact that the Welsh camp always needed the players for an extended period of time really to work on their fitness, and that says it all, doesn't it? I mean, they needed the time to work with them, get them up to speed. But the conditioning that comes from playing in the English Prem, I mean, they're full on battles, aren't they? Week in, week out. You've also got the atmosphere and the emotion, I think, as well, which is a big part to handle, because you can get emotionally tired. You have to get used to the emotions as well of playing, and there's a lot of rivalry in that league, which we've completely lost. We have Judgment Day, don't we? And a few of the other battles, but really, the rivalry's gone. It went a long time ago. So it's a good point. I think there's a lot in that. Yeah, it's not a good enough league, is it? But what are the alternatives?
No, well, absolutely. I think
we know what the alternative is.
We know what the alternative is. We probably haven't got time to get into that, and feel free to revisit any of our last pods from the last 6 months, or probably longer, actually, to kind of see what we think about that. But it's an interesting one, because I think if you were to go back to, let's go back to the World Cup quarterfinals last year when we beat France, right? Now, that side, I don't think you could say there was too many English-based players in that, could you? So we got, I think you had the, in fact, let's dig up the side now. Look, Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, obviously still playing in Wales. Tom Francis, yes. Ball, Alan Wyn Jones, Wainwright, Tipperick, Navidi, all were playing in Wales at the time. Gareth Davis, Dan Biggar has moved across the bridge, but, has played the vast majority of his career over here. Josh Adams, of course, big stint at Worcester. Hadley Parks, Owen Watkin, George North, Liam Williams. So, I don't know if you can say, I know the league isn't up to scratch. And again, I think Gatland did a wonderful job, as we've said before, of kind of beasting his players in order to get them up to international standard when he got, when he had them in training. So although I don't think it's a suitable, an ideal preparation, that's not to say that players coming through there aren't good enough to play international rugby. I just think that what this kind of regime, the PIVAC regime, has been trying to do, and quite rightly, is to grow that depth. And that includes essentially an exiles program, isn't it? Of looking at players like Rowlands and Johnny Williams, to a certain extent, Sheedy, players who either have Welsh heritage or are Welsh and playing outside of Wales, and trying to make sure we can entice them back into the setup. So, yeah, my thoughts are no, it's not the ideal preparation, but at the same time, I think a lot of the players coming through there have the potential to be good top international players.
Yeah, they are. I think you also have to look at the coaching as well. It's a different way of coaching, isn't it? That's needed when you haven't got that out and out top class sort of competitive edge in the league, and then also because our teams don't tend to make the latter stages of the Champions Cup, we don't have the same level of competitiveness there. Gatland was Gatland and Edwards and co were aware of that, weren't they? And they I think they had to work with them very differently, not only physically and from a fitness perspective, but also from a tactical perspective. I think keeping it very simple, keeping them focused on small wins, making it easy so everyone knew their roles, but also a big part with that would be the mentality as well. Mm. you you've got to have the mentality right. You've got to believe you're gonna you're good enough to win, and everyone around you is good enough to win as well, and you back every single one. And I think he was a master of that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Right, let's move on. Let's take this one from Rhys Lloyd. Have Wales put more than three phases together this autumn? What can be done between now and Six Nations to rectify this forwards issue?
Yeah.
I don't think I can remember an example of more than three phases.
Yeah. We've barely gone past three, have we? Or four. Certainly we haven't had a good run of them. And it is really, that's what also makes the games really difficult to watch, isn't it? But that's going back to the old question. What can we do? I think what we need to do is change the tactics up. So I was surprised again in this game and a number of the other games how we aren't. There's no pick and go from the forwards, and it's worked very well against England. I think it's worked well against Ireland in the past as well when we've done it, and because it just means that they, you know, it's difficult for their defensive lines to, you know, to adjust. And as we've said, defenses are so tight now that you have to do something different. And we've got players that can carry in those tight channels quite nicely. So that's something we can do. Pick and goes. Also, we still haven't used the wingers on the inside to play a little bit of a narrow game.
Yeah.
I think we're slightly wary of playing that narrow game against England and Ireland because they can smash people. But as we've shown against England this weekend, we can match teams physically if we're up for it.
Certainly the positive, wasn't it? I thought physicality, was the most physical Wales have been all autumn. They didn't look like they were just outgunned in terms of, particularly defensively. I didn't feel like we were losing every single collision, which was definitely a positive. I'd like to think
it's equally some of the most frustrating as well, isn't it? Because we know we can be physical. We can be not be dominated. In the other games, we were bullied.
Yeah.
We were made to look small. Shouldn't have happened.
I'd like to just revisit this part of the question with you, Dan, as well. What can be done between now and the Six Nations to rectify this forwards issue? Now, in the previous games, I think it had been a forwards issue, but to be fair to the forwards, I thought they put in a good shift this time round. And what I found, you know, frustrating, and it goes back to what we were talking about at the start of the show, is there was no imagination really from the backs. We just thought, right, as soon as we had the ball and went through a couple of phases, let's hoist it up in the air. And I think, you know, this doesn't just lie solely with the forwards. I think, like you said,
no, it doesn't.
Getting the wingers involved, trying a few different moves to unlock a defence. But does this all go back to the point right at the start of the show, that it's just simply too risky to do that?
Well, yeah, I think it's the overall game plan, isn't it? Because it's not purely on the forwards. Yeah, you need the backs. If the forwards are seeing the backs just shipping the ball out, and often we're going backwards, and then the forwards are, you know, that's very, very difficult for them to take mentally, isn't it? To start trucking it backwards, putting in a huge shift behind the ball line again, and then, you know, trying to secure our own ball. And we just look so deflated when that tends to happen. So I think the overall tactics need to change between the forwards and the backs to actually help both parties. It's almost like the way that we're laying blame a little bit, it's the forwards' fault and the backs haven't looked creative. They're joined, aren't they? And I found myself sometimes saying, well, you know, the backs haven't had the platform, so we can't even really look at the, you know, we can't question the backs. But the forwards certainly on Saturday did give us some good ball, didn't they? They, you know, a lot of the forwards played well, I thought, and you know, did really compete. So yeah, we've got to look at changing the tactics up. And I think those narrower, we know that Pivac likes to play in the wider channels, but the narrow channels are being ignored, and they're really, really good channels for us to get some change from, because a lot of teams know that we're just going to ship it. So if we just switch that up, it'll, you know, should bear fruit for us, and it'll make it a little bit easier for the forwards as well, because their fitness is being really tested, isn't it? A lot of them are being blown off the park on the fitness charts because they're having to work so hard. And I think we just need to help you know, help everyone out a little bit, make it a bit more cohesive. And from there, we'll start to build some phases. And when you build phases, you build confidence and just everything starts to become easier and you're going forward. And that's what it's about, isn't it?
Well, that might tie in quite nicely with this next question, actually. This one's from Matt Cornelius. Why do we seem to play better when the subs come on, regardless of who they are?
That does, yeah, that probably does tie in quite nicely. I think they're going to be exhausted because of the way in which we're having to play, which is literally, it's helter skelter, isn't it? Ball's in, it's being shipped out into the far channels. We're going backwards, we're being knocked around, we can't build any phase play, so we're then kicking the ball, we're chasing. It's a tiring game to play at the best of times, but the way in which we're playing it, I think, is both mentally tiring and also physically as well. So when the players come on, you do see that bit of a lift coming through. There's obviously going to be a lot more to it than that, but off the top of my head, yeah. What's your take on that question?
I mean, I think it's varied from game to game. I think part of it, as you say, is playing a nutritional game plan. You are going to benefit from getting some fresh legs onto the park. I think that...
Yeah, actually, just to butt in, I think a big part of it as well is that we've got the selections often wrong. So
that's going to be my next point.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, I think exactly that. If you look at the Ireland game where we had such trouble up front, particularly at the scrum, and then Wyn Jones came on, and I can't remember, it was Sampson, wasn't it? It was Wyn Jones, and Sampson came on off the bench and made a big difference there. That definitely had something to do with it. I think, you know, we also look at the difference Lloyd made on that night by getting the ball away quickly from the base of the ruck, where, you know, we've been kind of dallying a bit and trying to play a very box kick orientated game. But, you know, that said, he had an absolute stinker, I thought, yesterday, Lloyd. I thought it was one of his poorest games for Wales. And you know, like you, I am a fan of his, but it was disappointing that's how he played. Interesting case in point, actually, Lloyd Williams, because he is one of those players who I always think he plays better, certainly for Wales, with 21 on his back than he does with a 9 on his back.
Yeah,
honestly, over the years, I've always thought he's made an impact coming off the bench, but has kind of perhaps struggled to impose himself when he's been in the 9 jersey.
I've often, I mean, with Lloyd, because he's got such a good rugby brain, when he does come off the bench, to me, I've thought that he's able to, because he can read the game so well, he's looking at it from the sidelines and then able to sort of work out what will work well, if that makes sense, when he comes on.
Yeah.
Because you have a different perspective from the sideline. And that's because he's got a lot going on upstairs. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a fantastic game by him yesterday. I thought that he, you know, he was quite quiet, but they're not an easy pack to play against. So I thought he did okay. But, yeah, I know you're in a slightly different camp there.
Yeah, I was disappointed because I was, you know, I was hoping he was going to go out and have a really strong game. And like we said, you know, look like the Lloyd we saw come off the bench against Ireland. But yeah, just some couple of, you know, struggled to impose himself on the game. Yes, some, you know, some box kicking that was very loose to start with. You know, the very first one of the game was way too long. And you don't want to be kicking long to Johnny May, really. You know, there's that thing when the ball popped out of the back of the ruck and he tried to tuck it back in. He was always going to get caught up on that one. And yeah, some loose passes as well, which is not something that, you know, that we're used to seeing from him, because he's a really, you know, his service is normally so good. But there we go. The other thing, just to finish before we go to a break on the subs having more of an impact, is I would say in some of the game has already been won. And the opposition had taken the foot off the pedal. I don't think that was the case yesterday, but I think you look at Ireland, I think to a certain extent, you look at the game against France and against, even though the scoreline doesn't suggest it, I think it, you know, the subs made an impact, because really the game had been won, but Yeah, it's a mixture of that plus, like you say, selection and a nutritional game plan. That would be, I think, why the subs have made have made the difference in those fixtures. Right, we're going to have a quick break now. Coming up in the second half, we've got more listeners' questions to get stuck into. And, of course, we're going to look ahead to Wales versus Italy next week. And we're going to get Dan's thoughts on whether he would make some changes to the side that took the field yesterday. All of that coming up after this very quick break. Dive into another listener question, Dan. This one's from Matt Armstrong. If we continue to play pivot ball, in inverted commas, which established players might not fit into this game plan, and care to discuss any regional players that might fit the bill instead? I think the first question really is this, you know, are we any closer to knowing what game plan we're trying to play?
I think there's been a few glimmers over the last 2 weeks, but it's still not clear to me. It's not clear, is it? Is it clear to you?
No, I have no. No, I don't think so. I think we always said that we expected the kind of Pivac style of play to be quite open, expansive. Look to play a bit of an offloading game. Essentially, we were expecting what we saw at the Scarlets.
I can't remember an offload. That hit me yesterday.
No, the only thing I can think of that was vaguely resembled an offload was when Nick Tompkins kind of wriggled his arm free.
Got his hands out.
Yeah, after Romain Pouat called the world's quickest maul.
But almost all of this sort of, in this competition then, if we can call it that, I can't remember an offload. Oh, Shane Lewis Hughes had two, and... it's so odd, isn't it? Because the offloads are obviously a thing of Pivac loves them as all coaches do, don't they? They're great, but there's so few of them.
Well, I think that the way the game is being played at the moment is very risk averse. But you know, you would think when you're trailing a game like we were against Ireland, that you'd try a few things and just look to get the ball out and try and catch defences on the hop a little bit. And so I think that might have something to do with it. I don't know really. Like we say, if we were expecting some kind of Scarlet style game plan, it hasn't really worked out that way. I would say there's a couple of elements. Like yesterday, you didn't see a lot of... we didn't commit many numbers to the ruck, particularly in the first half. Which is fine, and it made the defence shore up a bit, but we also didn't look like we were going to turn much ball over. I don't know if you thought the same thing, which, again, I think really is understandable, because in that pack, I don't really see too many players who are turnover specialists in there. There's a lot of players I like, but, you know, Toby will win you the odd turnover, but he's not a fetcher. I don't think either of the flankers are out-and-out fetchers. I know both of them wear seven, but... You know, and he's not bad over the ball, but he's certainly not what you'd call a fetching seven. The second row is likewise. And then into the front row. It's not like you had Dylan Lewis in the front row, and you had I'm trying to think who would be a turnover specialist in the second row. But you know, like he had Tig Byrne at the Scarlets, and then in the back row he had, you know, even someone like Johnny Barkley was playing at eight, so he was able to turn ball over.
James Davis.
And then, you know, I just think that if you're going to play that style, you're going to need players who are able to steal your ball. Didn't look like we had that. I know there's a lot of injuries, but I don't know. That was my thought on it.
Yeah, I think with the style, I think we're caught between the way in which like a couple of different styles, maybe three different styles, and we're not actually doing any of them. I mean, if we look at the game yesterday, England didn't commit very many tacklers at all, did they?
Mm.
So there was literally one guy and two people in that was it. So it was mentioned it earlier, but it was really, we should have had that pick and go going. They would have had to commit a lot more players. And then if we are going to go wide, then we've sucked in a lot of their heavy hitters, because they're all smiling in the backs, aren't they? Forwards lining in amongst him with the backs, just literally lining up ready to smash. So you just got to take that. You just got to take that away from them. And I think that's one of the most frustrating things of this cup, is that the teams we've played, I don't think any of them have been at the top of their game when they've played against us.
No, I thought England won that in third gear. Top.
Yeah, they were comfortable. They never looked like losing it, but they weren't great at all. And I just thought tactically, if we changed it up a little bit, we could have made it a bit difficult for them. The fact that we didn't have fetches and things like that, and how close at times we got to being to doing fairly well in that game, just shows that we could have done something more there. And so, from a tactical perspective, I'm quite perplexed really by what we're not doing then.
Mm.
And I think it's more of that, what we're not doing as opposed to what we are doing.
Yeah, very interesting point there. The other thing I'd say, which brings us on to, I suppose, a bit of a can of worms, was the scoreline was close. And I think when you bear in mind, and I've got absolutely no doubt that England were the better side yesterday. I wasn't impressed with Wales at all. I thought we were bang average again. And England didn't really need to break a sweat to beat us. But scoreline-wise, it was close. And there's no way that that first try for England should have counted, because it's the most clear and obvious tackle in the air you'll ever likely to see. Would love to get your thoughts on Roman Platt's refereeing yesterday. As I say, I'm not looking to use this as an excuse, but I'd be very keen to get your take on it.
I thought it was a shocking game. I thought it was as bad as that. Yeah, he missed. How on earth he missed that tackle in the air? I don't know, because it's a tackle in the air, isn't it? You're not able to do that.
No, you can't do it. If you tackle,
it doesn't really matter what.
Doesn't matter if it's dangerous. No, that's the rule. You can't tackle in the air, and not missing it is one thing, Dan. To overrule the touch judge and say, no, it's fine, I saw it, nothing in that. It's mad that you look at the TMOs are called in for the tiniest of things, very fractional knock-ons that have taken place five phases before, yet the TMO has called that one and he's happy to overrule it. I have no idea what's going through his head when he's done that. Absolutely no idea.
And there was lots of decisions, to be fair, from Poit that I couldn't quite work out.
How Elliot Daly's connection, shoulders there, how that's not a penalty at the very least is beyond me. Again, I don't think there's any malice there whatsoever. There would have been mitigating circumstances. But for it to be a line out is madness.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he wasn't looking to take his head off. He was just looking to hit him hard, as England were all game. They wanted to front up, didn't they? And bully us. And yeah, but it was a penalty, wasn't it?
Hmm.
It was a penalty, maybe a little bit more, but it was a penalty. And then there was a
scrummaging. I thought was a bit of a lottery. I think a few that Samson Lee could quite rightly feel a little bit aggrieved at. But
I couldn't work out the scrums, what was going on. I thought they lost a few, they were hard done by on a few occasions. And we were as well. I thought when we won, we should have won a few scrum pens. England got awarded them, and vice versa. I don't think he knew what was going on there in the scrum. And it made for, again, that had an impact on the spectacle, didn't it? And because both sides weren't able to build from those. I was really looking forward to that scrum battle, and when we did have some proper scrums, then, if we can call it that, they were, we did all right, didn't we?
I think Flatman said this on commentary, that it wasn't that Wales were getting smashed up, and that Sinclair had got underneath Wyn Jones or anything like that. It was just the fact that you didn't get to a scrum because there were lots of infringements before the ball got put in. So yeah, it's, kind of the worst of both worlds, really. And then
Those technical penalties.
Yeah, linked with scrummaging and with Roman Poit. There's footage doing the rounds of what some are suggesting is Ellis Genge headbutting Tom Francis. Have you seen that? Have you got an opinion on that, Dan?
I have, yeah. I've looked at a lot of different clips of that. It's difficult, isn't it, to see. It doesn't look good. There's no two ways about it. It doesn't look great at all. But it's too difficult to actually know, isn't it, what exactly is going on. I mean, some people have said that was he pushed? I don't think he was. His foot, he's come off the floor, hasn't he? He's come off his knees, and he's then propelling himself forward. But if you're looking to have a little go at someone, you're gonna go forward. So your head's gonna come forward, your neck, everything's coming forward into it. But I don't know, it doesn't look great, does it, at all? And Francis's reaction, you know, he flicks it, he literally flips him right round, doesn't he, and gets on top of him. And you don't often see Tom Francis being, not too many things get to him, really. I'd like to see a few more things, you know, him really sort of be a bit more up for it in the front row at times. But he was riled by whatever happened there, wasn't he?
Yeah, I did. I'm not sure on intent, but I agree that the angles I've seen, it doesn't look great. But anyway, you know, again,
I think it's just easy. It's easy, isn't it? I don't want to be, you know, a sort of, you know, Welsh fan saying, "Oh, it's an absolute, you know, it's an outright head," but it doesn't look great. But who knows what's going on? What's going on in there?
Right, let's get stuck into the big question, Dan. This one is from Jamie Phillips. 7 defeats in 9 games, with the only wins coming over Italy and Georgia, yet Wayne Pivac insists Wales are heading in the right direction. Is he right? Discuss.
I'd say he's not right at the moment. Because we're not able to see, really, are we, what the game plan is. And we've said it a few times, I think, that if we can identify the game plan, then we can say, okay, we're on the right path. I mean, what has happened is that the physicality has upped, isn't it? We look as if we're in games now. You know, we want to be there.
Yeah, but I know a lot of people. Not a lot. I mean, things can tend to get blown up in Wales after a defeat or a victory, right? And I think that yesterday was an improved performance in terms of fronting up. But I would say that's kind of like entry-level international rugby physicality. It's not like we dominated the pack. They fronted up well, but you should front up in every game. You know, that's a prereq. It's not something that, you know, I think you need to, we need to say, oh, that's a massive step in the right direction. It's like, we should have been playing like that in every game, really, shouldn't we?
But that's how far, yeah, that's what the state of where it's been, isn't it? Because we went so far backwards that we're then seeing a positive in the players being not being bullied and being physical enough and up for it, because we just, that is a step forward. But I don't think that can be a step forward in terms of from the head coach, the main guy saying we're moving in the right direction. Is that what you're saying, that physicality side of it just can't even come into the equation, really, can it?
It's like, you know, the heading in the right direction thing is if you created a load of opportunities and you weren't able to finish them just because, you know, one offload didn't go to hand, or, you know, there was a little bit of fine margins didn't quite go your way. To say we're heading in the right direction because the pack put in a decent performance in terms of fronting up, yet at the same time didn't turn any ball over. I thought it was really average from Wales yesterday, which shows that they've been beyond below average for the weeks before that. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one thinking this, but that was, there was nothing really to write home about. I would say that, yes, it was better than the other performances and it was their best performance of the autumn, but it's not really, I didn't really see a great deal in there to suggest that great times are around the corner. I still think they're going to have to find a hell of a lot more to even compete with the likes of England and Ireland and France. And, you know, and Scotland, obviously, you know, they beat us in the Six Nations as well. So, yeah, I don't see anything in it to suggest we're heading in the right direction at the moment.
I think also heading in the right direction would mean that we'd have a better understanding of combinations, what the best side is as well. This and I would say we probably come out of this really in a worse position again, because we don't know what's going on in a good number of positions, really.
Do you know what? That's a great point, Dan. And there's a question coming in the last few minutes, which is from Warren. For the Six Nations, do Wales need to settle on a half-back pair to take them to the World Cup? If so, who? And with Reece Webb soon to turn 32, should he be left out moving forward? This is a really interesting point, because I think you're absolutely right to talk about selection there. It's one thing experimenting with stuff, but I still don't think he has any idea what his best 15 is. And the absolute heart of that is the halfbacks. It should have been, when he took over, a real point of strength, particularly at nine, to be able to say, we've got Thomas Williams, you know, an up-and-coming, really exciting prospect. Reece Webb is back. And we've got Gareth Davis, who's been doing a fantastic job here for the last few years. Then you throw into the mix, you know, Kieran Hardie and Lloyd Williams, etc. But we've ended up using, what, five, I think, scrum halves throughout the course of the whole season. And no one's getting a run. You know, he's chopping from one to the other, one to the other, one to the other. And as a result, I don't think anyone has really had a proper opportunity to make that shirt their own. And I don't know, that to me is, whereas at hooker, he's stuck with Elias, who actually I thought, again, his darts weren't good yesterday, but I thought he put in a lot of work tackling wise. But at hooker, he stuck with Elias the whole time, saying, no, he's the guy, he's the right guy for me. Whereas it's much more important to get your selection at nine right, because so much of it depends on it, particularly when you're looking at the style of play that you're trying to get aside to go out and deliver.
Yeah, I'd agree. The nine has been a real issue for us, and it's such a key position, isn't it? He needs to work out who he sees as the nine going forward, and give them a run of games. And even if they, you know, they don't play particularly well, I think he's going to have to back and say, look, that's the nine that I know can fit in with the way in which I want to go, and he's got the shirt. But at the moment, because we've got all the nines do offer something a little bit different, which is the case with all nines, isn't it? England have got the same thing. They have all their nines offer something different, but they know what nine they want at the moment for the game plan they're going down. But we're chopping and chasing so much, and I think that basically shows that we don't know what real game plan, you know, we want to do, because the nines are absolutely key to that, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And that's the real thing. And I've said this before, and you know, we've spoken about this before, but selection is so much what you're judged on at international level. I spoke in the week with our mate Ben Pegner, who did a lot of coaching around the world, and he reminded me of this. He said, you know, if you listen to the Clive Woodwards and the Jake Whites, they say that that's what being an international head coach is. You get so little time with the players that actually it's all on selection. That's the thing that you get judged on. And based on his selection so far, particularly at halfback, it's been confused at best, hasn't it? You know, you think at some point he'd have settled on a nine. And that should have happened either in the Six Nations or during the Autumn Nations Cup, and it just hasn't. And that, to me, is, you know, they're the big decisions that you've got to get right.
I think with the Pivac star as well, which we're trying to get into the Welsh setup. I think with a Gatland style, you can chop and change the nines a lot easier. But with his way, it's a harder way of doing it, because there's more going on in different parts of the park. So I think it just further adds to the confusion. So it's a good point you made. We need to stick with, I think it would be a, it'd be good to actually stick with one, well, two nines, wouldn't it, at the moment, as opposed to, you know, as you know, looking through four, five, and six nines, and building it from there.
Yeah, no, look, I think you're absolutely right, and it's a real pivotal point. If you were to look at selecting halfbacks, Dan, who would you be looking towards with a view to building towards a World Cup?
Well, I think we need to see more from Hardy. We haven't seen hardly any of him, but if they picked, you know, because it's got to come away a little bit from ourselves, isn't it? And look at the, you know, who Pivac has picked, and he picked Kieran Hardy, didn't he? He was in the squad, and he's had a small amount of game time. I thought the game time he has had, which is obviously very limited, he did okay. So he's got to be given more time to see how he fares up. And if Pivac's picked him, he thinks that he can do the job for him as the nine that they're looking for. I think Webb at the moment, he doesn't look right for me. I think he's carrying something. That's all I can think of. And if he was able to get back to where he is, I do agree with you that he's our best nine in terms of what he offers, because it's a very different threat, isn't it? I love the way he holds the ball and just offers a real threat around the base. Gareth, obviously, the way in which he's led our defence is being used, is going to, you know, that's nullified. It's going to be, you have to use him in a different way now. So I wonder whether that's probably going to go against him. And Thomas Williams, you're a huge fan, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what I like. It's what I like in a nine. You know, again, you know, the theme of the show is seems to be all around kicking, and you know, perhaps his natural ball skills and ability to look to take people on maybe lends itself to coming off the bench a bit more in an era of kicking, but. I mean, he's my kind of nine, Dan. I think his, you know, his first instinct is to attack and keep defences honest, and you know, and that's I think is, he's got all the attributes to do that at international level. And I think if I was asking, you know, if you're asking me who I'd be looking at and trying to give a run at in that nine shirt with a view towards the World Cup, it's him. I wouldn't be abandoning Reece Webb yet. As you know, if I'm a big fan of Thomas Williams, I'm an even bigger fan of Reece Webb. And I thought he made a big contribution off the bench yesterday, actually. I know what you mean. It's not the same Reece Webb yet, but all the more reason to have given him some game time. You know, either there's no point having Reece knocking around the squad, you know, either have him playing for the Ospreys and say, look, Reece, you've not played a lot over the last couple of years. You need to go and play for the Ospreys, concentrate on that, and then we'll look at you for Six Nations selection. Right, that's, if they'd have done that, then I think that's one thing. Or they'd have picked him and said, right, you're the nine for the autumn, go out there, show us that you're the Reece Webb of old. And if he doesn't do it, then okay,
then fine. You know.
Then you know. But to have him knocking around 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there, that I find really, really odd. And again, it's, you know, it's this kind of this lack of conviction around selection. So
that's a game where we've got more questions than answers, haven't we, on the squad, who's going to work, you know, who should be playing in what positions, because, you know, we could throw this same, you know, we could be talking about the centres here as well, couldn't we, the back row, you know, the front row, I think we've now settled on that, but there's a lot of questions over the, you know, back three as well. There's a lot that I would have liked to have seen come out of this tournament that hasn't come out, and we're going to have to go back to the drawing board again and almost start again with who plays where.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Right, still got a few questions to get through, Dan. Then, of course, we're going to get your thoughts on the team that should play Italy. This one is from Patrick. Given that Byron Hayward has already been jettisoned, should Humphreys not also come under scrutiny? Our forwards have regularly been second best in the set piece and at the breakdown. This in turn, obviously, adversely affecting what attacking formations Jones and Pivac have in mind.
I think it's a fair point. Forwards have been at the races, have they? At all, been out-muscled, out-gunned regularly, and we don't look like a cohesive sort of forward unit, do we? Set piece has been poor as well. we don't know who's making those selections, but obviously forwards coach has got to be massively involved in that. I mean, surely, you know, that's...
I don't know. I don't know. I think you and I have a different opinion on this. I just think that, yes, of course, you take into mind, you know, you take into consideration what the... and it is treated as a panel, but ultimately this has got to be Pivac's decision, right? This is his... he's the one who carries the can for selection, whether in the forwards or in the backs. And, you know, I think he'll, you know, he will take into consideration what John Humphrey says. But in terms of selection, Pivac carries the can for it. But in terms of getting them ready, that's where I think that Humphreys will come under scrutiny.
Yeah, I think it depends on the head coach, doesn't it? Some take more of a lead in and let the specialist coaches not influence things, but they have to take a lot of what they're seeing, you know, in training and who they want to work with. And they'll also push, you know, the forwards coaches will push who they want to see more of in training, who's going well, why they want that combination. And so they're influencing things. They're not, even if they're not making that ultimate decision at the end, it's being led that way. And I think, you know, we've got to look at those. We've got to look at Humphreys as well with those selections. Well, certainly from our seats anyway, where we're sitting, we don't know, do we? But that's got to be linked to it. And yeah, the pressure, you know, the pressure's on Humphreys. I think you can kind of see it, can't you? When the cameras scan around and see him in the stadium, he doesn't look particularly happy. And I suppose why would he with the way in which we're going at the moment? But I think there's a lot of pressure on Humphreys now at the moment, and you can't really argue against it because of how the pack have not performed, really.
There is pressure on him, but I don't envisage a scenario where he will go and the rest of the coaching staff won't. I think if he goes, and you've already got rid of Hayward, then that's essentially Pivac writing his own resignation letter. I can't see a scenario where that's going to happen. I think if Humphreys goes, it'll be with the rest of the staff. You know, and there might be a couple of people who'd hang around with that. You know, I could see Stephen Jones being in and around the squad, even if Pivac were to go. Likewise, you know, we know that Jenks has been there for a long time. But I don't see a scenario where Humphreys goes and it's not alongside Pivac.
What do you think on the attack? So we haven't seen.
I've seen anything.
Great deal there. Stephen Jones, any question marks there or not?
I think, look, if we'd have had a platform realistically throughout the autumn, then I think you could judge it based on that. But we haven't. And I mean, look, I don't think so. I think everything is stemming from the fact that we don't have a game plan. The players don't look particularly happy. They don't look hugely in control of where they're supposed to be a lot of the time. They're not playing well, and selection's all over the shop. That's where the problem is, I think, fundamentally.
So we're saying game plan, because the game plan, if the game plan's wrong, it'll make the individual specialist coaches look poor, won't it? Because they're not able to, you know, it has to be joined up, doesn't it? And it has to work for both parties. And it looks like the forwards. So I know the England game was a little bit different, to be fair, because it was so stop start. It's a bit difficult. We almost got to take that game out. But it looks like the forwards are really pissed off with the backs, and the backs are really pissed off with the forwards. That's how it actually looks, doesn't it?
We've all played in teams like that, haven't we, over the years, where, you know, the backs are frustrated because the forwards are taking a pummeling, or the forwards have played well and the backs aren't doing anything with it. We've all been in sides like that when you're under 13s or whatever. But it's no good. You know, you can't ever expect to compete if that's the mindset at international level. And they're things that have got to be addressed. And again, I think ultimately all of these things stem from the head coach, don't they? Because you're the one giving the direction. You're the one picking the players.
You're the one instilling the game plan
into people. I think all of that stems from the head coach.
If you can't get that game plan into the senior team leaders, and then it filtered down through the rest of the players, then that game plan is never going to be implemented, because your team aren't gonna back you. And if they have to back you, otherwise it's not gonna work. It just seems like they're not on the same page, or they're not wanting to go along with that. Mm-hmm. Again, it's difficult, is it? Because we're not in there, but it does seem like that, doesn't it? You can almost read it through the TV.
Yeah, no,
it just looks that way to me.
Okay, right. A couple of last questions to finish on, Dan. This one is from Asa Joseph. Where do we go from here? There are a few green shoots in this team, but overall the performance level is unsustainably bad. What can Pivac do to arrest the slide?
That's a great one, isn't it? Where do we go from here? I'm just going to answer it with, I don't know. what was that last bit?
What can Pivac do to arrest the slide?
I think they've got to have a really good look at themselves now after this campaign and look at what they're trying to do and is it going to work? And if it isn't going to work the way in which they want to play, they're going to have to do one or two things, aren't they? Either change themselves in terms of the game plan that they want to go down, or change the players that they've gone for. I'm not saying that's the thing that I would do, but if they can't get the players to buy into or play the game plan that Pivac wants to play, then he'll have to make changes. But I can't see where he can go to with that.
Mm.
So it's, you know, basically it doesn't bode well.
No, it doesn't. I mean, ultimately, I think we have been in these scenarios in the past, right? I think if you look back at Hansen's reign, you know, we were playing some very poor rugby, getting some terrible results, and then things just seemed to click, didn't they? And they in that one game in 2003, and we made some steps forward from there. I mean, if I'm honest, I was never massively enamoured with Hansen, but you know, that was something where he was under incredible pressure, and then things just suddenly clicked during that World Cup campaign, and at least there was a style of play, and it reignited some love within the Welsh public, which it feels like a similar scenario to that. The comparison that I constantly draw it back to is, it feels like it's Gareth Jenkins' era over again for me, and it feels like it's very, very disjointed, and that there's not the clear vision, the clear direction of how players want to play. Of how the coach wants the players to play, and it's, you know, what can he do to arrest the slide? You need, yes, performances, but you need to start getting results. It's credit in the bank. And
yeah,
Gatland had that, right? And Gatland had it from minute one, because he came with a load of trophies behind him. So he had credit in the bank. And Pivac doesn't have that. He did a very good job at the Scarlets, but he's used up all that credit, right? That's gone. And he's heavily in his overdraft now. He needs to start getting some wins. And I don't see where that's coming from. And he's not going to have much time with the players ahead of the Six Nations. So, you know, unless things have improved and we've not just seen it on the park yet, I don't know. I can't really see how he's going to address that before the start of the Six Nations.
No, they're going to have a good hard look at it, aren't they? And I think wins are, yeah, every game now needs to be a win, doesn't it? That's absolutely key. And I don't know, maybe they're able to change, and they need to do a lot of analysis and a lot of analysis over these games, and just maybe break down this game plan they're trying to do and make it more simple, so it can still be more elaborate than the way in which Warren wanted to play, but don't take it too far too quickly.
Well, I don't think there's any danger of that, is there? It's not like we're losing because we're throwing massive intercept passes, or we're trying loads of offloads. Like, we're losing because we're failing to do very simple things.
It can be quite technical behind the scenes, kind of the way in which they want to play in this area, this pod system,
that's true.
And so it can be, if you give people too much, it can, you know, they're not, it's not like they're a club side either, is it? They don't actually, you know, we've got loads of players that have never played together. A lot of players have, haven't had a huge amount of senior, you know, senior rugby in there as well, have they? So if the systems are too difficult to sort of to implement really, and you haven't got the combinations in there as well, then it can just fall down. And so I think we've really got to go back to basics, haven't we, really? And that's it often comes back to this, doesn't it? We've got to be hugely physical. We've got to make sure we get the selections as right as they possibly can do, because a lot of the selections over this campaign have been poor. They've been the wrong call after wrong call. Mm. And we'll be more competitive if we get them right. I'm not saying we're going to win, but we'll be more competitive. We've then got to vary up our tactics to a degree. And then look at who we want to build the side around, and again stick with a few combinations. We've only stuck with one combination really, but apart from that, we've mixed and meddled, haven't we? On top of that, we have got some, you know, so we've obviously massively missed Navidi, haven't we? But I think we certainly haven't helped ourselves over this. This tournament, and there's a lot that can be done very, very quickly, quick fixes just to put ourselves into a better position. But whether or not that's the answer, I don't know.
All right. Last question. This one is from Richard Needs, who starts by pointing out he always misses, because he's in Australia, he always misses the tweet that I send out asking for questions. So he got this one in early. Do you think Wales should dump everyone over the age of 31? In terms of building for the World Cup? If so, we have to give Pivac time and accept the poor results in the meantime. What was your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think we need to really. I think you need a mix of experience, of old heads around some of the younger guys. And what I am quite excited about is we've got talent. We've got talent in Wales. If you look at the players that aren't involved in the Welsh setup at the moment, there's lots of them, aren't there? And a lot of people would probably say, you know, a number of the players that aren't involved could or should be involved. So there's a lot of good players, but the younger guys are going to need the likes of the older experienced boys around. I mean, Alan Wynne-Jones was questioned, wasn't he? And I thought he had a big game. I thought he had a good game. He was, you know, there was nothing sort of spectacular, but he was everywhere into everything. Huge work rate, and it's exactly what we needed. So no, I do think we need some of the older heads to be around, mixed in with some of the youth. And I think that's how we're going to get the wins. I actually think that we'd end up probably in a worse place if we decided to move out, you know, Alan Wynne-Jones, for instance, and Jonathan in the centre. I think there's a lot that he can bring to a squad in terms of that defensive role that he's got, and from being on the park as well, helping the back three out. I thought Zamit had, you know, he played well, didn't he? I thought defensively he made some great reads.
I think he was like, you know, his tackle rate was, it was, I think he made like 13 or 14 tackles in there. So he got through a lot of work. And when he did get the ball in hand, you know, you just saw that absolute rapid pace that we want to see more of. And
he looked frightening, didn't he? When as soon as you got the ball, that was when you thought, hang on, you know, we just got to get more of it. We haven't touched on this, have we? But we didn't get him into the game.
No.
And I think, again, is he the type of guy that you want in the narrow channels? You'd say no. You want him on the outside. But if we were to bring Adams into that tight game, he loves the physicality. He loves smashing into them. He wants to beat England, as every Welsh person does. But he particularly loves that. He's played a lot of rugby over the bridge. They all have a little pop at him as well, and then it creates space on the outside for the likes of Sam. The game for me was quite disappointing in that we had some players on the park there that could do some damage, but we just didn't get to see them, did we? But I thought, you know, overall it was a pretty, an all right performance, really.
Right, let us finish then, Dan, by getting your thoughts on what you'd do for next week. We've spoken a lot about selection. I mean, this is essentially a shot to nothing. Italy, you know, they've not really torn up any trees during this autumn campaign. You know, fairly spirited against England in the Six Nations, spirited yesterday, but ultimately lost quite comprehensively to a France B team. So you'd think that it should be a shot to nothing. You know, is this a question of resting players, or is this actually one to say, right, if this was the first game of the Six Nations, which side would I pick and get them to go out there and play well? Or is it a mix and match?
No, I would do exactly what you said that first time round. So we need to treat this mentally as if this is a huge game. It's a must-win game, which I think it is. I think we have to win it, and we need to pick our strongest squad and gain some, you know, get some continuity in. So when we do make the changes, it's, you know, we're changing one or two players, but the systems are still the same. Everyone knows what they're doing. And we actually look to build a team then at the moment, as opposed to a sort of squad, you know, a squad of players, but then we don't quite know who's going to play and who's not. So I would go largely with a lot of the same players who were involved against England, Jed.
Mm.
Really, but I'd make a couple of changes. I'd make a change at two.
Go on.
Yeah, so I'd start Elliot D.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have Parry on the bench.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I'd keep the pack then the same.
Okay.
I thought Faletau as well, just to point out, I thought he had a brilliant game.
He had a very good game, didn't he? Yeah.
Very, very good game. Yeah. Yeah.
This is it, actually, to go back to that point of kind of abandoning players over 31. Not that he is, but, you know, I think the temptation is to look at it and say, oh, well, Toby, you know, he's not performed. He's not going to get back to his best. Jonathan Davis hasn't looked himself. Reece Webb hasn't looked himself. Oh, Alanwyn Jones is 35. It's like everyone looks shit in a shit team, don't you?
Easy to look poor, isn't it?
It is, and obviously, like, not being in the side, your stock rises. You know, I think we genuinely have massively missed Josh Navidi, but if Josh Navidi had played in all of these games, we wouldn't have necessarily won them. And he might have played very well, as he more often than not does. But it's, you know, your stock always rises when you're not in a poor team, doesn't it? So, I wouldn't be writing off a lot of these players.
No, there's a lot that these guys can offer. I mean, you could see Faletau being world-class there yesterday, couldn't you?
Mm.
He made it difficult for England, and he was a real point of difference for us. There was a lot of sort of, hard work and work rate on the park from the back row. But then you saw the absolute class from Faletau that, you know, was only going to come from him.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was right that we talked about him. He could have been dropped earlier, but I'm not talking about dropping him from the whole setup.
No, I know that. But while we're talking about the back row, are you just going with that 6-7 combination because there's no one else fit? I mean, that's not the 6-7 that you'd be picking in the Six Nations if you've got more players back from. Again, to come at this, I like both those players. I'm a big fan of both of them. I think they're excellent, but they're not. You know, that is not, that 6-7 combination is not international ready yet, and I'm not convinced that there's the balance between that back row as a whole.
I'd say there's not the balance. I'd agree with you. Yeah, it's not the right balance. But if no one's fit, then
you'd stick it. Yeah, stick with it.
Yeah, if no one's fit. Yeah, but I think we've got a really exciting back row, haven't we?
when people are fit, there's a lot of players to come back in there. Tipperary, Navidi, Moriarty, etc. Then you'd hope at some point we get to see Ellis Jenkins and maybe Ollie Griffiths. You know, there are loads of options. It just, horribly, everyone seems to be injured at the moment. But it's, and obviously you've got Josh McLeod, who was in the squad to start with, who's injured as well. But anyway, there we go. Let's get there. Let's get your thoughts on the backs quickly before we wrap up.
Yeah, so for the Italy game, I'd like to see Kieran Hardy at nine.
Okay.
I would go with Bigger at 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Johnny Williams had a really, really good game, put some massive hits in.
Yeah, I thought he was very good. I was very impressed, actually.
Some good carries. Just looked really assured, didn't he? Really comfortable.
Yeah.
So 13, it's not quite working for me.
I don't think Tompkins is a 13. I think he's a 12.
But what would you do at 13?
What, next week? Yeah. I probably, is John Fox fit? Will he be fit?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, if he's fit, he's in, isn't he?
I think so.
And that would be lovely to see Johnny Williams and
John Fox together. That would be the combination I'd go for if John Fox is fit. Otherwise, what option is there? It's, you've got, do you want Watkin at 13? I'm not sure that Watkin and Williams would be the right choice. I think ideally it would be Williams and Fox.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see, that's the combination I'd like to see. I think Tompkins has shown, yes, it's not working for him at 13. Very, very difficult player to read, isn't he?
He is, and you do get the feeling that sometimes his legs don't know what they're going to do. But that also is the opportunity sometimes. I'm a big fan of Tompkins. I wouldn't be throwing him away, but I would be considering him as a 12. But I don't think you can drop Johnny Williams based on yesterday's performance. I thought he was very impressive.
Yeah, I thought it was a good game, and I think Tompkins, maybe for the time being, best position is the bench, and a real sort of live wire, and there's no doubt he can create something, can he? He's very, very strong, deceptively strong actually, for the size of him, and he's got that ability to beat a man, isn't he? Which, if you look at our back line, we haven't got too many that can beat people on a sixpence, have we? But he can. So, but the centre partnership for me in this game, it hasn't quite worked. It's not quite gelling at the moment, but something to work on. Okay. Zamit, I can't wait to see more of him.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah, just want to see him getting more on the ball. I think he could cause the pair of those two against Italy could cause some serious damage if we can bring him into the midfield. Just please, can we see that? And Halfpenny for me at fullback is the main man, but I know a lot of people would go with Liam Williams.
Yeah, I think I'd stick with Halfpenny as well. I'd go the same back three you've gone for there. Lots of pace out wide. Just got to get them into the game a bit more.
Yeah, I think a lot of it can be, we can see a very, very different back line if we can just bring the, bring the wingers into the game more, because we've got two, those two wingers there would, I'm not going to say they'd walk into the other sides, but they'd certainly be there or thereabouts, wouldn't they?
Mm.
You'd have to have a really good look at them. Even the English wingers, they'd have a look at Josh Adams and Zamit. We know that. So we have to get them more on the ball. It's really, really important, I think.
No, absolutely agree with you, Dan. Right, well, that is it for another week. We will be back next week after the Italy game, and of course, we'll be back the week after that as well. So, big thanks to everyone who has been listening. Big thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get your hands on some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk.
Jen, I've got another big thanks.
Go on.
Big thanks to The Guardian and
yeah,
Paul Rees.
That was going to be my last one.
Was it? No,
it was,
come
yeah.
on.
It was. No, it was nice. It was, very nice to be featured in there. And, Paul's been on the show a couple of times. He's a fantastic journalist and, he's so clued up when it comes to the bigger picture things. And it was very nice to be asked for a bit of an opinion. And I think, he specifically came to us because of the fact that we've got, that we deal with a lot of fan opinion on a weekly basis. So that was a good way to get, you know, to get some fan opinion in there rather than, you know, just that of an ex-player or something. So no, it was very nice to be featured on The Guardian. If you want to read it, you can have a look at our Twitter account and you can see the link on there. Is that it? Is it?
Yeah, that was a great ending there.
Perfect.
Sports Social Podcast Network.